Welcome to the Level 5 Podcast, Episode 2. The man is back, Eric Reynolds, and we're talking leadership, and this week we're talking a lot about sales. My name's Steve Willoughby. I love to have the opportunity to talk business, to talk leadership, and to talk with Eric Reynolds on the Level 5 Podcast. Let's start right off the bat. How can you talk to Eric? Well, first of all, you can go to lvl5consulting.com. You can also catch him on Facebook at EQR Coach and on LinkedIn, Eric Q. Reynolds. Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing good. Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Thank you very much. You know, we have that in common where we really do love talking about leadership.
Oh, yeah.
We really do love talking about putting a team together, developing the culture, and then adding value and serving people. It's fun to talk about. It can be very frustrating to do. It can be very difficult to do. But we're talking to a lot of people that is their role. That is what they're responsible for. They're trying to grow their business. They're trying to add more value. What does Level 5 leadership provide for those people?
Yeah, so broadly speaking, in that sense, with Level 5, if we kind of take a quick dip back into the levels of energy, right? Level 5 is we all win or we don't do this. So one of the big aspects of that is consensus, mm-hmm. driving consensus within the organization. And most importantly, knowing when it's a moment to call a shot. Okay. So there are times when you're in a leadership situation and the entire team's looking at you, either literally or proverbially, and you need to make the call. Mm-hmm. And that's part of being a leader. As you focus on the primary method of driving consensus on your team, everybody ensuring everybody is getting a win out of the situation, those calls become easier because you almost have an innate sense of what that call should be in that moment. So it really gives you an opportunity to benefit not only from driving the group opinion and the group direction for your organization, but knowing when you need to make the call yourself.
And if you don't care, let's go back through all five levels very quickly. And
don't want to, Steve. Okay, well, I'm tired.
Both can't win, we're not going to do it.
If the listeners didn't get it the first round, I'm not going to repeat myself. Not.
I've worked for you before. Well, level one is I lose.
I lose. Yes. Level one is I lose. It is characterized by a sense of no matter how this situation's going down, I'm going to take a hit. It's not going to end well for me. My example for my life and level one moments that I might have. And again, it is important to note, we're not just a thing, right? We're not just a level. We go up and down through the levels throughout the day. But I get in a checkout line at a grocery store. You do not want to get in line behind me. If you see me, see my face, it's probably a good reason to go out to my website and check out my mug in the About Me section. Because if you get behind me in line, the person in front of me, without fail, is going to ask if they can pay for their groceries with a third-party check. You know, so
Bitcoin, something like that.
I immediately turn around to the person behind me and apologize. This is my fault.
Okay.
So that's my level one. If I'm with my wife, Jen, you pick the line.
Right.
I don't pick lines.
Gotcha.
My kids know I don't pick lines.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So I'm a victim when it comes to the checkout lines in stores.
We got to work on that too.
Yes.
Very negative.
Yes. Level two is I win, you lose.
Okay.
So that's a situation characterized by at least you're thinking somebody's going to get a win, but somebody's got to lose in order for you to get the win. Sports analogies are common places where, you know, you're going to have some level two energy by requirement, right? Only in soccer, and I struggle to find other major sports, if you will, that have tie situations as the outcome. But generally, someone's going to win and someone's going to lose. It's the energy of it's a combative energy at times. And while it can be useful, as any level of energy can be useful in certain moments, it's something that it can be exhausting after a while. If you're constantly going around in combat mode, whether it's at work or at home, it's going to exhaust you.
And that can become part of your sales culture that, hey, we're going to go, you know, we're going to go bag somebody today. Well, really, is that what you want to be talking about? Or are you going to go out and help somebody and add value and those types of things? And, you know, we both kind of grew up in the 80s. In the 80s, that was the deal. Go out, kill something, and bring it back to the cave type of mentality. Yes. And overall, I still understand that concept, but there's two different ways in, or a lot of different ways in doing that.
Well, and in some situations, the actual level two salesperson, the challenge is if there's no wins out there, they're not bringing them in, they can start to look at what I would call lesser value deals for the organization. And suddenly they're getting a win in the form of a closed deal and a commission check. And the organization's getting the loss because now you have a client that you've got no business on your roster.
Right.
You know, it's just not a good deal for the company.
And sometimes, specifically in media, and one of the things we're trying to change here, that mentality would be if we were on a sales team, hey, I got to go win because if I don't go win, you may go win with the person I'm and we're going to battle. This is my account and, well, I'm going to get all the money. You're not going to get anything. And I don't know how that helps the client a whole lot.
Yeah, it's that point goes exactly to be careful and thoughtful when you set up your commission plans. Do not establish competitive commission plans between role types. So, for example, in your scenario there, account executives who are managing existing clients and hunters, maybe a sales executive, quote unquote, as a title, out there getting new business and new labels. There can be, they can trip over themselves because what if it's a client that is existing, but you know what? They had a conversation at lunch. They were catching up with the sales executive and suddenly there's another contract in play, right? So you have to make clear delineations in your commission plans there as to who's going to get the money for that.
Right.
And you have to be very, you know, you have to be fairly rigid in those situations. So it encourages the behavior you want from the team.
Level three, I'm going off memory, so I may be wrong here, is I win, if you win, that's okay too.
That is absolutely correct. Okay. Yes, that is the, it's a hallmark of rationalization, level three is. If I wanted to start a business where I encouraged organizations on how to fail, I would call it level three consulting.
Okay.
That's where I would go. With that. And what's funny is that in most situations, which is where I find most organizations that I work with, they don't even know that it's happening while it's happening. And that's because everyone is, as you said, thinking I'm getting a win out of this situation. I often use this new initiative as an example. Mm-hmm. We had the meeting. Steve's telling us all this, what we're going to be doing. And I'm going to get the win. You know, I hope everybody else gets a win out of it, too. I hope, you know, marketing and, you know, accounting and operations, they all get a win, shipping. But, you know, if they don't, okay. I still know I've got the win.
Right.
So you now essentially, you know, you've seen those like the Thunderbirds or the Blue Angels. They do that formation where they come in a tight five pack and then shoot out all different directions, right? That's what your organization does when they leave the room after that meeting. They're pushing Mach speed in the opposite after what? After their win.
Yep.
They don't even have the time to pay attention to what's going on with the others, right? So the problem is when you come back a week later and you start asking individuals, you can already see there's a vibration, there's turbulence happening in that scenario. And probably in 2 weeks, the whole initiative has lost its wind. You know, there's nothing happening. And organizations can't quite understand how they're going from that raucous excitement in the room to nobody ended up doing anything. Or people did stuff, but we still didn't exceed in the win in the initiative.
Right.
So, you know, it's a tricky level to spot, but it's definitely one that after you have about four of those meetings, people start to get a little demoralized.
Right.
And they start to look at each other and go, well, I'm winning. Why can't shipping get the, why does shipping always have to ruin the win?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So
right.
it's a little insidious on how it creeps in.
Level five, as you talked about, we all win or we're not going to do this. And level four, I'll admit, I'm lost there. I think we both win. I don't know. Where are we going with level four?
Level four is the, it's sort of the leadership level of service. It's you win.
Okay.
You win. So it's a scenario where you are basically giving someone else the win. You are serving in a way that delivers the win for the other individual. It is without regard to your own win in that scenario. So
which is very dangerous when you really think about it.
It is. It's again, we can have a level four moment, right? We could be running late for work, but yet we see someone broken down on the side of the road with a flat tire. We stop, we help them out. We're giving, you know, them the service, them the win.
Yep.
We're not going to get the win out of that situation, but that's okay. What you have to keep an eye on, I think, to where you're going is if it's a constant. Because those individuals can be the ones in meetings that are cheering it on and, God, I love this. And, you know, everything's fantastic. And then the next day they're on the floor of their office crying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they're starting, you know, something happened to where it's sort of one of those I do and do and do moments and do not get it. All I asked John for was this simple little thing. And I've done all these things for John and he told me no. And so it creates this imbalance of things. And that is really where danger can lie, because now you've got to get that individual out of the ditch, essentially, right? The emotional ditch there, and say, hey, you know, we got to retool here on how you're looking at this.
There's also sometimes some companies, and perhaps I've been in part of some of these companies in the past. Hey, we're going to be the good guys. We're going to be the nice guy. We're going to keep doing this and doing this. And sooner or later, somebody's going to go, wow, they're nice. I'm going to invest. Well, that's not how that works, or that's not how that should work. Where a conversation would be, hey, here's where we're going, but this is what, you know, a true sales aspect of it has to happen, or you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, if you're going to go be nice, but don't expect then for somebody else to turn around and thank you in the way you want to be thanked, right? If you're not going to sit down and have that big boy, big girl conversation to begin with.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct there. And in a broader sense with an organization, sales individuals, you would hope they're nice, right? You would hope they're able to be engaging enough to get people to have conversations with them, to get to know them, build relationships. Then the company has to deliver, you know, so you're kind of going from that, you know, salesperson who's really just doing everything they can to move the deal along, get the relationship going. They're foring it a lot in that sense to get it going. And maybe then you run into an organization without a process. And then that just, you know, that train starts to tilt on the rails there as it's going around the turn. And that crashes really quick. So it's something that you would think, oh, you win. That's such a great, you know, if everybody was a level four, it's not quite that simple.
And as we started out with, Eric told you about level five, we all win or we don't do this. And that's really the level where you're trying to get through. But again, back to Eric's point, and this is a statement looking for a comment back, throughout the day, sometimes throughout the meeting, sometimes throughout the sales calls, we're going to dip into some of those other levels throughout that whole process.
Moments.
Yes.
Could be throughout the minute.
Right.
You could be going through different scenarios. What I focus on with organizations, aside from the actual consulting part around sales and process and that bit, is getting to the point where you are consciously aware of where you are on that scale that you just mentioned, because you have control of that. Believe it or not, you have control of that. So if you are able to catch yourself in moments where maybe you're in a level one situation, you're in a funk, you walked in bad day, you know, coming in the office, you have the ability to make the decision to get up to level five and to begin, you know, consciously leading others through the day that way.
We're talking about sales this week. I think we always do a nice job of talking about sales, but we really want to get focused on that. And again, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to the Level 5 Podcast. This is Episode 2. Eric Reynolds from Level 5 Consulting, and you can learn more about him at lvl5consulting.com. But we've always talked about sales, and Eric and I have known each other because he approached me and we met through some mutual friends, and then we talked about what's happening within Ozarks Dynacom, and some of that will come out, some of it will not, obviously. But I was just impressed with not only Eric being a consultant, because to some degree I am a consultant and consultants do what consultants do, but very much a coach as well. And where I may fancy myself as a coach, you're a certified coach that went through the process and have the systems and able to work there. But really, in my opinion, what almost puts you over the top is you've done this. You've been in the chair where you needed to get billions of dollars, or you've been in the chair where you needed millions of dollars for a mom and pop, whatever. It was your responsibility to generate that revenue through a team, through a process and system. Yeah. And it's not just something, hey, I've read all about this in books. I mean, you were doing it, then became the certified coach to become better there, and then moved to the area, and the rest is history. But just talk about that a little bit, how important that real scenario is that you bring to the table.
Yeah. Well, first off, I thought you were going to say my amazing personality was what set me apart. But
it does set you apart.
I'm feeling a little level one right now, but I'm going to try and carry on.
Good. Let's move it up.
So it is something that was intriguing to me, because the sales timeline and my 25 years spent in that particular field of effort came before the coaching certification. And one of the reasons why I pursued the coaching certification was to get a better grasp on why we were being successful, or why my teams were successful. And I'm just an individual that's curious like that. I ask why all the time. It's my favorite question. I'm that 3-year-old mm-hmm. that gets the whys. You know, why? It's mm-hmm. So in that scenario, and one of the reasons that spurned the curiosity is because through various businesses and corporations, I had used different sales methodology types, whether it was strategic selling or Sandler sales method or revenue force, you know, and keep naming them, and, you know, was still able to get success in those organizations. And it's like, well, are they all just that good? Are they, you know, are they all that solid? Or is it even the sales methodology? Is it the people? And, you know, came to find out really that what I thought was driving the success was not even close to what was actually happening. And one of the things that I was just straight lucky and would go back and thank my parents on this front, and you know, my upbringing and my friends and everything else that got me to that point, is I just generally wanted to see everybody get a win out of the situation. So I was sort of on some levels doing level five without even knowing what it was. And at times, much to the chagrin of my superiors at these organizations, whether it was protecting a teammate, you know, that mm-hmm. was on the team, or, you know, helping them close a deal, or, you know, things along those lines. So, but it was really eye-opening for me. It just clicked to say, okay, that aspect of when you say everybody gets a win, it's one thing. It's kind of lip service. Mm-hmm. You really have to actively pursue the understanding of if they are getting a win and if they are not in level five. And that's the part that your sales leadership needs to have down pat. They need to understand how critical that is. Leaders lead, leaders don't do. leaders call the shots when they need to, and they gain consensus when they need to. One of the best, some of the best leaders, you know, in business or, you know, that have been written or written about in our societies know when to stay out of things and know how to generate other leaders and grow other leaders underneath them. You're not scalable as a person to cover an entire organization. And no matter what you may think about yourself, you're not a unicorn. You're not good at everything, right? So there's an aspect that level five just naturally draws people in because they know when they're a part of that team, everybody actually does have their back.
That is so important for a culture. And we're both culture guys. We understand the need for culture. And we did some interviews here with the team, and we cut those interviews up for some Help Wanted ads. And we ask every team member, I think, four or five different questions, and then we put the answers together. And everybody talked about the family aspect of it, almost to the point where like a family here, that it wasn't concerning to me, but it was like, okay, that's kind of a buzzword, and that's, you know. But then as they went and gave examples of why that was, and transparency started coming out, and you heard things like, you know, what's transparency so important, and they are transparency good, or they are very transparent, good or bad, and those types of things. And that's really what you're talking about here, having the guts to really be that transparent, to really be talking about this. So again, I want to recap just quickly. Level one is I lose. Level two is I win, you lose. Level three, I win. If you win, okay. Level four is you win. And then level five, we're all going to win or we don't do this. So when you think of level five consulting, when you think of the different levels, some people look at leadership and they're thinking a lot of different things, but level five really dives into sales big time. It's a big part of the whole process because sales is so important, clearly, to the revenue in the company, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's at the – if you think about extending the umbrella of who's getting the win or everybody wins, that your customer needs to be in that mix. So it's a question an organization should be asking itself daily.
And anytime you talk about sales and anytime you talk about leaderships, there's a lot of common business myths on what's going on specifically around sales. And I think you just said something that I would imagine at least a pretty good percentage of people are saying that's not true. And that is your fact just a minute ago when you said, hey, you know, you're in leadership and leaders don't do. And I could hear a lot of the leaders I'm thinking going, well, if I don't do it, who's going to do it? But right. But what you went on to say is you can't scale that. You've got to understand, dive into that when it looks at level five and that sales aspect moving forward and how you help leaders and how you help companies put all that together.
Yeah, that's a great question. We don't have the time to go through that. No, I'm just kidding. So when you look at level five and what happens in the context of level five and everybody getting the win is that I mentioned earlier various departments. Management, think of yourself as the GM, for example, as a department.
Okay.
There needs to be accountability within each of those areas, right? You need to be very good and passionate about what you do. That's going to be an alignment that's good for your own personal reasons as well as necessary for the company. That's why I mentioned we're not all great at, you know, we're not great at everything. Mm-hmm. There's no unicorns out there. So when you are a leader in that case, you need to be really good at leading. You need to be the individual that shows leadership in those moments. And one of the things that's going to happen in those large, let's say we'll go back to the initiative example, right, is that you're actively engaging everybody in that room to make sure that there are wins going on, and you're encouraging and really requiring all the other leaders to be communicating with each other to make sure they're getting the win. And recently I had someone ask me the question or say, well, that won't work. I don't know John's job in IT. I couldn't sit down and troubleshoot, you know, a server problem that we were having. I can't make sure that John gets the win. Don't mistake what I'm saying for domain or technical expertise when I say making sure someone's getting the win. It's not, oh, John, I see you're having a bad day. Hop up out of the chair. I'll, you know, crack my knuckles and get on that keyboard for you.
Right.
It's not that. It's a scenario whereby you are communicating with those individuals and actively seeking their situation with this initiative that we're using as an example, right? So much so that as a leader in that scenario, you have to also be able to demonstrate that you are there for leadership when decisions need to be made by the GM in some cases. You may need to break a tie. You know, I said consensus earlier. If three of people want this and three people want that, you may need to pick a road, right? And so you can't, as the GM, get involved in everybody's role and understand what's going on a daily basis with each and every one. That's not how a level five foundation is laid within an organization. So it's not that you don't, as a leader, have technical expertise. It's not that you couldn't do something if you had to. It's you're making a conscious choice to lead every day and help others do the same within their respective departments.
Give you an example that some people will give me, and they've been critical of this, and that's cool. I'm used to people being critical, but I'm going to make the decisions I think's best. When I came back, so, you know, left in 16, came back right before the pandemic in 2020, and some people, mainly my mother and others, would say that I was a part of a pretty successful morning show for a number of years here. And when I came back, I didn't listen to the radio stations much. And people would say, why is that? I said, because we have to be focused on rebuilding the business. There's going to come a time we're going to sit down on that, and that's really going to be important, what's happening and all of those things on the air. But I trust the people on the air. And the last thing we need is to go back to the way I used to do it back in, you know, however many years ago, because that's not happening now. And it's different people and all of those things. I don't know if that's bad leadership. I don't know, whatever. But I knew to stay away from that area because it just wasn't time. So be critical.
I mean, I would look at that as, so you certainly have had enough experience to make the call on where to focus. You also can't be everywhere all the time, all at once, right? There's only one being that we know that can do that. You know, there's a situation there where you have to major on the majors, as the cliche goes. And when you're coming back into a situation, or for instance, when I start with an organization, and the question is always, where do we begin? Where do we start? One of the things that I like to begin examining is, you know, where on a macro level, what do you think, Steve, as I would ask you, are, give me three of your most critical processes that happen every day at your organization? And I mean, on a high level, you know, that's whether it's reaching out to organizations might be one of them, having the engineers make sure that the sessions are being cut and released might be another one. And you will almost immediately start going in a little bit deep on those and find out that we don't really have an idea of what we're supposed to do at certain steps. And one of the things that I want to let folks know is that if you are sort of being told by a consultant that, you know, you need to go deep and wide into your process and document every single step, that's not how I approach things.
Okay.
I approach them from, you need to know what the step is, and it needs to be clear in written form what the step is. But I'm going to make the assumption, as a leader, you are hiring the people that know how to do that step, right? And as a leader, you should be making the same assumptions in that. Because you do not want to get into micromanagement of those steps, because you'll just end up, you'll have a consultant come, you'll have a wall that's dedicated to process and every single step that's been outlined and detailed. And then one morning you'll come in and look at that thing and it'll look like the Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, where do I even start with this beast, right? So you do have to understand what those things are from a process perspective, but you need to make sure you're getting the talent in the door that can run through those. So, you know, when you examine things and said, I'm going to start over here, my guess is next, you probably asked yourself, do I have the right people to accomplish those things?
Right.
And that's really a great place to go.
You're listening to the Level 5 Podcast. This is episode 2. His name is Eric Reynolds. You can find him at LVL5 Consulting. That's LVL, the number 5, consulting.com, at EQR Coach on Facebook or on LinkedIn at Eric Q. Reynolds. We're talking about Level 5 leadership every single week, and this week we're really focusing on sales. So if revenue is a situation, then man, how do I grow revenue? How do I go deeper with customers? All of those different things. One of the things that Eric and I are going to do throughout is I will be the bad example, because I have been the bad example before. I actually applied to become a before model once. I was perfect for the job, but there wasn't the market I thought there would be. But when we talk about sales, what are some more of those maybe business myths that we might have been raised with? We might have been told over and over and over again that, yeah, this is the right way. What are some of those myths that you would talk to people about?
Yeah, you know, especially in the initial conversations that I might have with an organization as I kind of explore my way around who's managing what in different areas. One of the ones that comes up all the time is I'm not in sales. I'm not, that's not my job, sales. And there's not a single person in your organization that's not in sales. So, you know, the sales individual, much like we were talking earlier, is not great at everything. They have a certain role. They bring the contract in. You want it to be a good contract and be deemed so by the organization. And then the organization needs to grab that ball and run, right? And that action of operations and delivering is absolutely a sales component. Often for products and services, somebody's got to go train somebody. Training is sales. When you send someone on site to train them something, whether it's, these are the appliances that I just installed, and so we're going to run through those, or, you know, a new solar system, that training is sales. Because you're telling them about the high points. You know, you are, in fact, just a little quick tip, it's an excellent place to pick up new sales reps.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is people who have training experience.
Yeah.
So in that scenario, everybody is involved in some aspect with that customer, or may become involved with that customer at some point. And it's going to be critical that they understand that they are then the face of the company in that moment.
This is really a pretty good organization to talk about that, because, you know, Josh Grisham on an interview can impact sales just as much as somebody that's out there talking about somebody that's going to do that, or The Upside, or Living Life with Lisa, having that interview was, you know, were they treated with respect? Was there confidence in how things were going? Is this the organization I want to do business with? And while it may not close sales, it can ruin sales pretty simple, because it's like, wow, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
And we've got to be careful about that.
Yeah. The typical roadway to a successful close of business, as preferred by the organization, right? This contract meets all the requirements that you've outlined on a good client. And I don't want to shame anybody if they haven't outlined what an ideal customer is, as an example. But let's say you've got that mapped out in that situation. That road to get to the successful deal is a bike path through Dogwood Canyon. You know, it's that small. There's no margin for error as you go. And you are likely going to have to expose parts of your company to a new prospect that they want to talk to or meet, whether it's technical resources or maybe it's a, you know, a GC for a project or something along those lines. The ability to blow that deal is Highway 65.
Yep.
You know, all lanes.
Yep.
It's that easy to screw it up.
Yep.
At any point in that process. So I don't want to terrify anyone who might be thinking about a sales career, but that is really the analogy, because you are constantly dealing with this concept of cognitive dissonance when you're talking to new prospects. And you're trying to keep that down to a non-existent level. And cognitive dissonance, simply explained, is the little voices in people's head that say, oh, this might be a problem.
Yep.
And so you're trying to keep that to a minimum by showing them the great aspects and benefits of working with your company. So to your point, very easy to lose it, very hard to keep it on track.
We were interviewing companies, and this happened to be a virtual program. And I talked to two salespeople. The first guy, I knew that he was a cat lover, and I knew that he was a wedding DJ. And candidly, throughout that conversation, I was like, what does this have to do with anything? And I don't want to be that jerk, but it was, hey, he was very excited to tell me that he was a cat guy and a wedding DJ. Well, that's cool. I mean, that's fine. We, you know.
Yeah.
But the other guy, I don't know whether he was a cat lover, but I learned about his company, and I don't know if he was a wedding DJ, but, you know, I felt better about doing some business there.
Yeah.
My point is, you know, one was focused on me, and one was focused on building that relationship.
Yeah.
And I have been known, in fact, I said this, and I think I was wrong, and I said it in front of some people in a moment of frustration when I was here before. I said, I get really tired of hearing about this business relationship, because I was having salespeople going, hey, if I didn't have that account, I don't think they'd advertise anywhere if it weren't for me. Mm-hmm. And I would say, so you're saying when you leave this company or you stop doing what you're doing, that company's going to fold. It's actually going to sell because they can't buy from you.
Yeah.
Let's get worried about a business relationship and really worry about them instead of. And one of the things I would say is, do you have business relationships, or is it all buddy-buddy relationships? And that can be dangerous, too. So anyway, sorry, I might have gone a little crazy there. But I think it's important to understand that from a leadership point of view. What are we talking to people about?
Yeah. Well, and sometimes people make mistakes. That guy that's telling you he loves cats probably found a Steve Willoughby in Cheshire, England, that owned a cat farm and thought you were him. And so I can't explain the wedding DJ thing, but the cat thing's pretty common.
Well, you're always thinking, Eric. You're always thinking. This next one that you talk about, it may be my favorite story that you have about the client that is always firing clients. But you say, you know, the common business myth is any sales is a good sale. And we really got to be careful about that, because it can get to that point that, oh, man, we moved it. We got things going in the right direction. Yeah, but that sale just, it's not going to work for the client, and it's not going to work for our people, and this is not going to end good. This is the 20-minute the 20-minute relationship in Vegas. They went to the wedding chapel. Chances are we're not going to celebrate 50 years
missing.
Here.
Yeah. It's something, going back to what I said earlier about knowing who your ideal client is, right? It's important that your sales folks and whoever's out there speaking to the target market you're trying to serve at large understands what a good client looks like in those situations. They're not all good clients. And if you don't have that set up in a way that you are able to filter those, usually around Q4 sometime, you know, if you're on a calendar year, in early December to mid-December is when your worst clients start rolling in because someone's trying to make their number somewhere. And again, back to the energy leadership side of that, if they're in that level two, you know, I'm going to get the win in this, or even level three, I'm going to get a win because I'm going to close the deal. Man, I hope they're a good client for the company. type thing. So you really have to understand. And I, you know, I've worked with organizations that now have a client limit that they've set where, and once they, you know, when they get to that number, say it's 300 clients, a commercial cleaning business out of St. Louis, and they go to client number 301, they're going to let go one of their 300 clients. They're going to say, you know what, this one on a cost basis is losing us money. Have a very frank conversation, and they're empowered to do so with that. They don't have sort of this lack feeling about, oh, you know, I'm really scared of letting clients go, but able to have a real candid conversation with them and say, you know, if we can't alter this, then we'll have to end on schedule with our contract. So
let's talk about that for just a second. So that was a client of yours and obviously very successful and obviously has some courage. There's a lot of people that would not do that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that don't fire clients now, you know, on a regular basis. But let's say they do that and they do that and they do that till they get to the point that really client 300 isn't so bad because we've had this. If they came to you and said, hey, we're going to move it to 310 or 305, or would you prefer them going, no, we're going to go 400 clients and see. I mean, is there something you would feel comfortable with them doing that?
Well, I would look at that. It's a great question. I would simply look at that as, you know, if you take the 80-20 rule with this, and let's just assume you've cleaned up that 20%, right? You're going to have improved bottom line performance on your organization, hence more revenue that you're able to put back into the business. So like in this point with this cleaning company, they would have the ability to hire more cleaning teams in that situation and take the time to find competent cleaning teams because they're trying to strike a balance with, hey, we have essentially the ninja of cleaning teams out there that are just doing fantastic jobs. And we can only sustain that at a certain level. And if we, you know, if we're the number of clients becomes one of those things where they have understood where that lever sits, if you will. And of course, if you didn't have this process and you started to go up to client 360 and you're not letting you have the lack mentality, everybody's still on board, all your clients are going to start to suffer, right? So I would be perfectly fine with them increasing, assuming they could confidently say that, hey, you know, we're in a level five situation with all our clients now. You know, we took a vote the other day and the sheets of paper were blank. No names came up. So we're going to reinvest that revenue and grow the business even further.
Yeah. I'd love to meet that company sometime because that, you know, and you've told that story. That's been a few years ago back when the mentality was more is better. I got to get aggressive. I've got to get to 400 or 350 or whatever it is. And, you know, one of the things we talk about here is we grow and as we get better, that next level is not going to get easier. It's called the next level for a reason. We've got to be able to perform and understand the processes and systems and continue to do that at that next level, or we're not going to have consistent growth moving forward.
Yeah. And you can, obviously you can establish a certain level of revenue and size that you're comfortable with maintaining. There's, you know, that's part of what, as a coach, I help the organization and the leadership or leader, CEO, whoever, understand is what is success for you. And I understand that that's something that morphs over time. You know, that changes as time goes on, but we need to have a real clear definition of what that is before we begin the process of getting to that point. So it's different with every company.
I've seen companies, perhaps been in companies, where all of a sudden you get to that.
Which ones?
You get to that level. And, you know, you're going back to the file cabinet and say, okay, this is what we did last May. And you hand it to the person and say, put 2023 on this. This is what we're going to do. And that can become a process and system that'll really get you in trouble pretty quickly. But with that mentality you were talking about, it's constant improvement. It's constantly getting better. It's constantly measuring different things.
Yeah. You know, there's a way to establish milestones organizationally where you take a look at things like you're talking about, things that you worked out 6 months ago. It's not something, you know, you do not want that to become a distraction from closing business for the organization, right? You don't want to, I always get this expression wrong. You don't want to forsake the acceptable for the perfect or something like that, you know, or you don't want perfection.
Yeah, you
got to
start bringing those down for me.
Yeah, sorry.
That was a high level, highbrow thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you
got to remember who you're. So two guys walk into a bar.
Okay, now we got something.
Sports analogy, maybe?
We went over this, Harry. We went over this. Yeah, I told you who you were working with.
Shouldn't have even brought it up, actually. But suffice it to say, you don't want to be sitting there, all right, team, it's the weekly review of our process. No, you know, that's something where if you're doing an initiative and it's ongoing initially, sure, maybe you take a few swipes at it and you get it to where you need it to be. But you will very easily, through the feedback of your team, be able to tell if things are clicking in the right direction. And as a leader, you follow those instincts.
So you and I are going to have and maybe we should do this on the air, I'm not sure, or on the podcast, I'm not sure I'm ready for that. You've said a couple of things that I need to get better on. Ideal customer. Here's the problem. I have my idea of what an ideal customer is, but if you were to ask different people, that ain't going to be pretty. So I made a note of that.
Yeah.
Also, I would tell you, I think we're pretty good in a sales plan, but I'm wondering how that's really gonna, you know, as we take it to the dressing room and turn the fluorescent lights on and have it disrobe.
Oh,
that is not a fun environment. That concerns me a little bit. How important is that sales plan?
It's fundamental. I mean, it is fundamental, and it's actually one of the areas that I really enjoy working with the existing sales team that an organization might have or individual.
How many perfect sales plans have you walked into and said, well, you're perfect there?
One.
Okay.
One. And I wouldn't call it perfect, but I would say that it was addressed down to the behavior. And again, behaviors are a critical component of the sales plan. And what I mean by that is that if you bring on, let's just use the new salesperson analogy. You pluck somebody out of a training role. Okay, good on you. Bring them in. You're going to mentor them and basically take them two more steps up the stairs to sales from training. And you have a document and a plan that shows them, here are the behaviors that you need to be doing on what frequency, meaning daily, weekly, monthly, in order to drive success in the role that you're in. So here's how many widgets we want you to sell. And if you act on these behaviors and execute these behaviors, you're going to sell that many widgets. So the truth is, most organizations that I work with don't know the answer to that question right out of the gate. So it in many ways is unfair to even an experienced salesperson coming in to not know, hey, what is my roadmap to get to that scenario? So I'll just make up numbers. That could be 5 cold calls a day. That could be a minimum of 5 follow-up conversations a week. So someone that you got a hold of, and now you're sort of having a detailing conversation, talking about your company, giving them a little intro. And you can use the steps of your sales process as a guide here. I need you to attend 2 trade shows a quarter. So you're getting out there into the marketplace and you're selling our wares and you know how to speak comfortably, you know, on the company's behalf. So you follow that blueprint. Guess what? Math-wise, and there is a way to math this out, you're going to have X number of deals as a sales representative for the organization. So, you know, the sales plan, that is the biggest part of the sales plan. And again, when you give them, back to what I said earlier, I want you to go to a couple trade shows sure, you need to have someone probably help them get the booth there, or what, you know, whatever the setup is, but you're not going to give them a script to read from, you know, you're not going to get into the micro. You have to have an expectation of accountability and, you know, expertise with the people you're hiring.
Yeah. You don't expect to walk by their booth and they're sitting in the back of the booth reading the paper or reading something that,
Okay. You triggered me on that one. See, cause I gotta, just for a moment, if I could step up, where's the soapbox in this studio?
Anytime you walk into any studio, it's a soapbox.
I have the microphone. Yeah. So my favorite thing is when the attendees at a trade show are all in session. They're all in a seminar somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Listening to a speaker, you know, tell them about a new process or the latest and greatest in the industry. And to your point, they're sitting back at the booth. They're on their laptop. They may, you know, sometimes they're just sitting there doing God knows what, reading the program for the thing. One of the best ways to get deals as a sales individual is to network with other salespeople who are selling to your client, right? You know your market. They're selling a different product than yours. They're not your competitor. There may be some at a trade show that are your competitor.
Sure.
Fine.
Sure.
I would still argue never hurts to keep them close, right? Yeah. As the old saying goes. But if you've got widget A and they're selling widget B, and you're not competitive, you should be getting to know their widget B salespeople, because they're going to help you know who's where. And if you network with them, they can set up conversations for you. They can get you indoors. You can get them indoors. That's called level 5, right? That's like, hey, I want to network with you and we can both get a huge win out of this. Not kick back, open up the Nashville Today, you know, newspaper or whatever city you're in at that moment for the trade show and sit there. So as my team learned, if Eric shows up at the show, at least everybody act like they're talking to the other reps.
Let's play the game at least, please. Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, I'll step down now. Thank you for that that time.
Well, but it really is important. And sometimes that, to me, you know, either taught or allowed, if you've got somebody that doesn't do well in those situations, maybe we shouldn't put them in those particular situations. Because, you know, one of the things that I think about a lot is we sometimes focus so much on the weakness of the person. We let the strengths almost get weaker because we're trying to bring that weaker level up. Mm, and I know there's two different thoughts to that, and I understand that.
Yeah.
But if all we're trying to do is help me get my where I fail a little bit stronger, does that make sense? Or where I succeed a little bit stronger, what's going to be best for the customer and the company and all of that?
Major on the majors, right? Yeah. Go with their strengths. Just lean into those. Yeah. That's all part of the recruitment process. Yeah.
So really, when you're talking sales plan, you're talking behaviors, you're talking roadmap, you're almost, it kind of goes back to what you said before in the sales plan, what's our ideal customer, and then what are the behaviors? And you reminded me of Coach Nick Saban when he talks about winning a national championship is not a goal. It is an outcome. The goal is doing the things every day that gets you to the level you are so good you can't do it wrong, i.e. a sales plan, i.e. behaviors that you're talking about here. Yeah. And sometimes I get aggravated because we talk about numbers at the end of the year. We talk about numbers at the month. And maybe I've worked at a company that would sacrifice whatever at the end of the month so we could all say we hit a number. Yes. And it's like, okay, but we're running out of months. Sooner or later, we can't do that.
Right.
But if you're working on that daily basis and working that process, things work better for you, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. You're focusing in on the right areas at that point. And, you know, when you look at it from the perspective of behaviors, as we're talking about in a sales plan, it's important that you don't make it a cage. You know, you don't box in your reps and what they have. You're simply giving them a roadmap to execute on these things in order to be successful. So why is that critical? Well, there's several reasons, but the biggest is when they're not getting their numbers, you can go back and lean on the behaviors and say, you know, where are you struggling with these, or why aren't we getting there? And you have accountability that you can drive down through that individual for performance. And, you know, in the situation of, you know, not making it a cage, you don't want to get it so intrinsically complicated that every step of the way is mapped out in your CRM, like Salesforce, as an example, if you have one of those. I've seen organizations where they, you know, walk into the room with pride and show me their 19 steps that a rep has to go in and check off of for one stage of the sales process. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting that. Could someone push this vein back in up here? Is it showing? Is my face red? Usually I get red right here. Is something happening? You know, yeah. I'm worried for my own health. And they're ecstatic that they've got it documented.
Yep.
But then why am I here? You know, because there's a reason why that's not working, because you have built a cage.
Yep.
And salespeople are, by and large, creative individuals who are hopefully engaging with others, and you got to give them room to be that in those scenarios. So it's a balance there, but you need to at least know the fundamental levels of the steps so you can keep people accountable.
His name is Eric Reynolds. You're listening to the Level 5 Podcast. This is Episode 2, and you can learn all about Level 5 and, more importantly, learn how to reach Eric at LVL5. That's LVL, the number 5, consulting.com. If you're on Facebook, at EQR Coach or Eric Q. Reynolds on LinkedIn. The Level 5 Podcast is just that. It is a podcast designed to help businesses. It's a podcast designed to help leaders. And Eric is in our community and is helping people and has helped this organization, and hopefully will continue to do that. And what we wanted to do is have a podcast that will help. And, you know, you may have heard some of the things here, and you know, am I buying into this? Are we doing this? Are we doing that? And really, you've got a document they can go to, LVL5consulting.com, and really it kind of breaks down, hey, this is, you know, the 5 habits of successful businesses, kind of outlines and brings it all together so they can learn a little bit more.
Yeah, it's very concise. And certainly I would hope give somebody just sort of like a raised eyebrow on any of those things listed with that, where they're not actually delivering on that front. And within that document, I talk about some of the things we've talked about today. Everyone's in sales. You know, behaviors are important. Level 3 and level 5, where you might be in level 3 and where you got to get to level 5 in those situations. So I tried to keep it to a couple of pages so it would be a quick and easy read. So I hope people enjoy that.
Let's talk about some of the things I've learned here, and we've just got a few minutes, so we can't go in detail. You know, some of the things you talked about on the behaviors. Mm-hmm. I think about some of the language we use here, and we talk about accountability a lot, and accountability is something very important to me, and not only for the team, but what the team can expect from the company. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot about, hey, the company is letting you down in this particular point. We got to understand we're all part of the company. I mean, it's kind of like what the government's doing for us. Well, let's talk about that, you know, with the government. But you're talking about behaviors, and we're not talking enough about behaviors. We're really talking about results. Hey, Eric, here's our expectations, 2 of these a week or 2 of these a day, and it's more results than behaviors. So that's one of the things I want to take a look at. The other thing you talked about with the scripts and that is we try to get more, you know, my team will just take this away from me, because if I'm doing a script, all of a sudden, if I was writing a script for your business, it'd be concise. It would be easy. But if I do it for my business, it's like, you know, all of a sudden, position 27 healer. Pages worth of script.
You're looking around for the battle axe. Where is the axe? I can't chop this up.
Right. But that is a problem that you're helping me realize, because I mean, I think I'm pretty good helping other people, but I suck when it comes to this because I got all these details we got to get into and nobody cares. So I want to tell you that, and I don't know if you've got some feedback for me, but those are two things that I want to walk away with and say we need to start making some adjustments.
Yeah. Well, I would look at an example on you know, a process around a customer coming in. Let's say you are you've got a small business, you're selling widgets in this situation. It's a widget that costs a few thousand bucks, so it's a significant purchase. Maybe you're selling it to consumers or other small businesses. You really want to, at some level of detail, not minute, not micromanage, but you want to understand the steps on if that person says, yes, I want to buy one, what are the next things that happen, in what order, and how soon before I'm done with that process and available for another customer? Or how many of those processes can I handle at the same time? This is something that you can actually begin as a leader to ask your employees to help you understand. And again, keep the process to a recognizable step, the behavior. Don't go into hyper detail in those situations. But if you don't know, okay, so when someone comes to pick up that lawn tractor I just sold them, what do I need to make sure is ready on the tractor before I hand it off to them? Mm-hmm. There's no faster way to an upset customer mm-hmm. than a lack of process. Because when that happens, you don't even know what went wrong or where. And so, you know, there's work that needs to be done in that area. It doesn't need to fill up a wall, but if you don't understand that, You have no foundation to know whether you're doing well or not.
Yeah, and it's important for the customer to understand that when I come in, I'm going to get this. Or, you know, we're going to have a meeting next Tuesday or whatever that
is.
You've been listening to the Level 5 Podcast. His name is Eric Reynolds. You can find him at LVL5Consulting.com. Jump on Facebook at EQR Coach or Eric Q. Reynolds on LinkedIn. So we appreciate it, sir. We look forward to next week. And next week, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be going a little more detailed into the leadership concept and some of the key things that I think will be eye-openers for leaders and maybe where you're misplacing your focus.
Your team needs you. The community, the region needs you to do well. All of this is on our shoulders as leaders. And one of the things we say around here, everybody's a leader. They don't have a spot on the team. So thanks for tuning in to the Level 5 Podcast. We'll see you next week.